We're going to finish this section, this segment off by talking about the issue of how much, what percentage of Midrashei Chazal are pure Masara. What percentage of Midrashei Chazal are pure Masara? And we're going to, in halachic issues, it's a pretty clear, I mean, relatively clear, if you know the sources, how we could figure this out. And we're going to go from there to Agadata as best as we can and try to learn up. And I think that'll like finish the topic of Midrashim. That's what it feels like to me. And we also want to know, a related topic to that, is it's a known thing that you can like say your own pshat places. It's a known thing like, okay, yeah, it's a gadata, I can say my own, I can do what I want, ki'ilu. There's some people have a attitude of sort of what I consider hefkeris, which means anything goes, it's just drush anyway. So we'll get to that. I want to get to that also and try to explain the way I understand why that's sort of true and sort of not true. Okay, I want to start out with a Midrash Chazal that's somewhat known. Maybe you may have heard it. You may not have heard it. Let's see if I can find the pasuk. In Parshas Kisisa. Let's see if we can find this. In Parshas Kisisa, it says that Hashem gave Moshe Rabbeinu everything. In Parshas Kisisa, it says, let's see if this is, where is it right here? Yeah, here it is. Vayomer Hashem Moshe, Ksav Chas et Dvar Ma'ilu, Ki Al Pi et Dvar Ma'ilu, Karati et Chabriz et Vistisro. And then it also says that, I think that's where it says it. Let's see if Rashi brings it. No. Rashi doesn't bring it. Okay. There's a Midrash Chazal, which is relatively well known, or I think is well known. Like, so I'm going to tell it to you, and you tell me if you've heard it. And Midrash says that Hashem gave Moshe Rabbeinu the entirety of the Torah, and including everything that people are going to be machadosh, that people are going to come up with, including one of the midrashim has a nusach, including what a Talmud Vosik, what a good student is going to ask his Rebbe. Have you ever heard that one? No? Strike three? I got all of you? Struck out inside. Okay. That's a midrash which I thought was somewhat known. I guess it's not as known as I thought it was. How about that?
It's known to you.
I don't know. That's a good question. It's definitely valid. What's known to me, it's hard to know. It's an interesting question. Okay, anyway, that's a relatively well-known midrash. Some people, and this is actually a very classic, this is sort of like a test case. We've been discussing the issue of when we take midrashim literally and when we don't take them literally. Do we take that midrash literally? That midrash, it says that when Hashem gave Moshe the Torah, He gave him everything. Shame I don't have the midrash. Because it's, you'll see why in a moment. I'm using it as an example because, as we say, I have information up my sleeve. Yeah.
Isn't there another midrash that says that Moshe Rabbeinu saw Rabbi Akiva giving shira?
Okay, there you go. There's a good one. It's a Gemara on Shabbos. The Gemara on Shabbos says that Moshe Rabbeinu saw Rabbi Akiva saying shir, and he said, "Are you with us, Josh?" And he said a chiddush. And Moshe Rabbeinu, he said a chiddush. And Talmidim asked him, "How do you know it?" And he said, "I learned it from the Tagan." In the Sefer Torah, you know, there's little crowns on top of certain letters. So Rabbi Akiva says, "I learned it out of that." And the implications of the Gemara are that Moshe Rabbeinu himself didn't know those dinim ki'ila. I'll tell you something. There's a long maral about that in Tiferes that I have seen, but not recently. And I don't remember that it's directly pertinent to what we're doing, so I didn't go back over the Maral. But yes, okay. That you're asking us, in other words, if we take that first Midrash literally, the Midrash seems to say that all the entirety of Torah, not just what, you know, Ki'ilu, the basic laws, but also all the Shakavataya, all the Shakavataya, all the discussion in Shas, that is definitely, in other words, there is a person who could simplistically insist that Ramaisa, the Midrash seems to say that everything was given, including the Shakavataya and Shas, and that's all from Moshe Mitzrayim, Ki'ilu. That's what people would Ki'ilu say. And I say is, okay, I don't know, you know, I'm not sure if anyone learns the Midrash that way. But I am sure that the Rambam and Ramban don't learn the Midrash that way. So I mean, what am I supposed to say? So, the Rambam understands it like this. And of course, if you want to know where the Rambam is in the Hakamah to Perashah Mishnah. And the Rambam does not mention the Midrash explicitly for the records. He does not midrash the midrash explicitly, but he to say that the Rambam was aware that midrash existed is like, you know, that's like, it's like it's so patently obvious that the Rambam would know that midrash. You know, as they say, it's a midrash in five places. It could be it's also Tanchuma. I only looked in the Midrash Rabbah. I didn't do what I call an exhaustive search to show how many different places it's brought. I didn't have time to compare contrast. The Midrash has brought five places in Midrash Rabbah, plus minus. So, yeah, you'll find minor differences, and if you have time, you can make something out of those minor differences. But I didn't have that much time. Baruch Hashem did manage to find it. That took a little while. But okay, anyway, sort of like this. The Rambam starts out with the following statement, and contrary to common belief, he was not saying this as an argument. He says the following statement: when there is an absolute Kabbalah, it is not possible to have machlokas. When there is an absolute Kabbalah, when there is a true Masara, a true, you know, tradition, it's not possible to have machlokas. And from that, the Rambam goes on to say that the parallel implication of that is if I have a machlokas, then by force, then there was not a pure mesorah involved. Now there is an obvious question which we'll get to if we have time. And if anyone comes up with it, I say, I'll give you a tea bag for the question. But a very obvious, well-known question that, fascinatingly, I discovered there's a Ramban about, so I can't resist. But let's just go on in the meantime with the Rambam. So now, we do know that in Shas, there are Machlokasin and Machlokasin and more Machlokasin, almost, you know, from the beginning of Shas till the end, about how we learn different things out. And what we conclude basically from that, what the Rambam concludes is most of those machlokasin are in terms of extrapolation, not in terms of pure mesorah. There are rare places where there's a machlokas, and one side says, kach kibalti, this is what I received. And the Rambam says, I don't, maybe have seen one or two of them. Yeah, you can try asking Rabbi David, and maybe he could... maybe he could give you an estimation. There are people you could ask. Someone has known Shas pretty well to answer that one on the spot. How many times it says that in Shas? Not that many times. It does say it, but not that many times. Kach kibalti, when it says kach kibalti, then the machlokas is over. And that is the Shitas HaRambam. In those places, there's no machlokas. In the other place, the issue is extrapolation, how you learn up. Now, how does the Rambam understand that famous Midrash? That very famous Midrash, or what I think is famous. Again, it's five places in the Midrash Rabbah, it's other people brought other places, well-known Midrash. Midrash seems to say that everything, the entire Shakavataya of Shas, was given to Moshe. How does the Rambam understand that? So the way I understand it is, the Rambam understands that it's implicit in what Moshe Rabbeinu was given. In other words, because Moshe Rabbeinu is given Torah, he's given the Torah, and he's given rules of how to learn Torah, and that's what we spoke about two times ago. The Torah methodology is unchanged. It's implicit when I give Torah, And I give methodology that it's ki'ilu, that it was given to Moshe. It's not given to Moshe, but it's ki'ilu given to Moshe. Why does the Midrash say it's given to Moshe? So my pshat in this is the following. It doesn't make a difference. It does not make a difference if Moshe Rabbeinu was the one who learnt out of these psukim using Torah methodology, a law, a halacha, or Rebbe Yehuda Nasi. It makes no difference at all. They are absolutely equally d'oraisa. Both limudim are equally d'oraisa. And that's why the Midrash says everything, including the Shaka Tariya, Ke'ilu was given to Moshe. Because methodology was given to Moshe, and things which I use proper application methodology, it's as if it was given to Moshe. It's equally in terms of being d'oraisa, of having bearing, it's the same thing. Now the question goes now, so what is a pure absolute Masara? Because there are certain things which are pure absolute Masara. One thing the Rambam says is pure absolute Masara, and this is the rule now, this is an important rule. There are places in Torah where Pshat says one thing and Chazal says something else. And there is no machlokas about that. For example, Ayin ba'ayin. Lex Telonicus. I believe that's the proper word for it in legal English.
Lex.
Lex Telonicus, that's the word, isn't it? Lex Telonicus? I mean, I don't know exactly what it means, but it means the law of retribution. That's Be'erach what it means. Ayin ba'ayin, shein b'shein, yad b'yad, regel b'regel. That's right. Okay. So, as the Rambam points out, the psukim there, the pasuk seems to say one thing, Chazal says something else, and not only do Chazal say something else, there's no machlokas about that at all. There's no two shittas about it. And Lechara, when you have, in other words, we have plenty of places where the pasuk, you know, ki'ilu, not ki'ilu, the pasuk, saying something, and Chazal are going with the pasuk. Yet there's still a machlokas of exactly how I apply the pasuk. And I have machlokas like that almost ad infinitum in Shas. Why, pray tell, says the Rambam, about ayin ba'ayin, l'chor, there should be a machlokas. Yet there's no machlokas. So the Rambam advises, the Rambam infers from that, that it obviously must be, that halacha is pure masara. That is something that Moshe told over to Yoshua, told over to the Skenim, who was given down, that way. Because if not, there should have been a machlokas. He gives about 3-4 examples, or maybe even 5, like that, where Chazal, the pasuk says one thing, Chazal says something else. And the conclusion which we must come to is it's pure Masara. It's not just Chazal saying something else. There's Chazal saying, and there is no machlokas. And if there should be a machlokas anywhere, that's where there should be machlokas. Now the Rambam does give a different example of something which is pure Masara. And one of the other examples the Rambam gives of pure Masara is Dalad Minim. Is the Dalad, is the four, the Lul of the Lul of an Esrik? And the Rambam over there says the following piece of logic, which is, I mean, the Rambam is really bothered by a problem. The problem is the Gemara learns out, is trying to learn out, prove what Esrog is. Maybe different things, maybe this, maybe that, comes up with the limud. And the Rambam is sort of bothered by that, that it's like inconceivable to think that the Shas didn't know what an Esrog is. It's inconceivable.
What do you mean that?
The Gemara in Sukkah, okay. The Gemara in Sukkah is trying to show what's an Esrog, what's an Etrog, what is pre-Eitz Hadar. The words pre-Eitz Hadar are very hard to know. I mean, we in modern Hebrew, echoing Chazal, translated as citron or citrus fruit. That's what we do. But l'maisa, at the end of the day, the literal translation of the words means a fruit of a beautiful tree. But that's the literal translation. I mean, a lot of trees are beautiful. Okay, so l'chara can't mean a grape, because the grape tree, the grape vine ain't beautiful. I mean, it has the halacha of a tree for whatever. Let's not get into why. I mean, it's fascinating that halacha and botany and botany go basically the same in this. If it has a trunk that grows year to year, then it's considered a tree. And if it doesn't have a real trunk, then it's not considered a tree. Yeah, well, it's Chazal. Up here, Pashas. Listen, Chazal Duff certainly knew about it a very long time ago. I don't want to. That's like a side point. The point is you cannot tell me that Priyat Hadar means a grapevine, the grapevine, because as it says in Yecheskel, it's really not that efficient of a tree, of a wood for doing much with. Grapevine, like, what are you doing with it exactly? You obviously can't say, but it's very wide open. In Ke'ilu, we could have extreme arguments about it. And again, at Tanoic level, there's no machlokas what Priyat Hadar is. Everyone knows it's an Esrog, it's Etrog. Everyone knows that. So what the Gemara doing, okay, that drama is a different shtickel Torah, which is Mechachmas HaKasu, Mechachmas HaTorah is that even though there was X amount of Torah, which was pure Kabbalah, it is still possible to prove a certain amount of that from learning them out of Pesukim. And the Rambam, we might as well circle and finish off the Rambam, which I didn't even say I was going to do, but I'm going to do it anyway. And that is the Rambam says, that's what a Halacha Moshe Sinai is. What's a Halacha Moshe Sinai? The Rambam asks the question is, why do we call certain things Halacha Moshe Sinai and other things not? Obviously, Priyat Hadar, being Esrog, was given to Moshe at Sinai. Tadar being Esrog was obviously given at Sinai. Yet, if we do not call it Halacha Moshe Sinai. So the Rambam says, and this is one of these things, is the Rambam is the only one who comments on it, and I'm not sure if anyone...
Why couldn't it be something that was simply lost throughout the...
No, that's not what the Rambam... No, if it was lost, then it can't... Halacha Moshe Sinai means it's pure Masorah. I mean, it's pure tradition. And the Rambam, wait, let me finish the Rambam off. The Rambam says, "Is Halacha Moshe Sinai means is this is what we received, and there's no way to prove it. There's no way to prove it. Shurin mechitzin chetzitzin Halacha Moshe Sinai. The shurin of how much you have to eat, etc. Mechitza, the laws of mechitza, which I sort of say they're sort of implicit. They're used in a number of halachas." They are daraisa in cases, in many cases. Mechitza. And chetzitzin, what's a chetzitzin in mikvah? Those are halacha moshe sinai. The Rambam counts, I think, 102 halacha moshe sinais in Shas. Okay, now, here's the question I thought someone might ask, so I'm going to ask it instead. No one got it, so I'm going to ask it. The Rambam said, if there's a Masorah, there's no Machlokas. What about Gzeres Shava? It says explicitly in Shas, you can't learn Gzeres Shava, El Im Kein Limdo Mi Rabo, unless you've learned it from your Rebbe. So L'chor it has to be Masorah. And we find, the Ramban says, we find so many cases of Machlokas and about applications of Gzeres Shava, that you can't count them. I would guess clearly it's in the hundreds, if probably maybe even thousands, and more than that I'm not sure. But it's certainly hundreds of cases of Machlokasin about how to apply Gzeres Shavas. Correct, we're all very familiar, Machlokasin, how we apply Gzeres Shavas. So, it's funny, I heard this question when I was about your age. I heard this question when I was your age. The Rambam says, on a Kabbalah there's no machlokas, I would have Gzeres Shava. And just last year I was learning the Ramban's Hasagas, the Rambam Sefer Mitzvahs, and the Ramban's Hasagas. It's a very fun thing to do, Ki'ilu, if you understand, I mean, on a Torah perspective. A lot of fun, really a lot of fun. At least for me. And the Ramban explicitly asks the question and answers the question. And I'm sort of like, I've heard people discuss it on and off for, let's say, almost 30 years. And I'm sort of like half surprised and shocked. Sort of, part of me is and part of me is not. Part of me is not. That no one ever bothered telling me about this Rumpan. So I'm going to share it with you. So you won't have to carry that burden through your lives. Okay, the Rabban answers the question in the following way. Because again, it's explicit in Shasa. You can only learn if you're Kibulei Mirabe. You can't learn it on your own. I mean, obviously not. You understand? It seems random, doesn't it? Ki'ilu, not ki'ilu. Without a Masara, it is apparently random. Says the Ramban. What was the Gzeirah Shava? What is the Masara of Gzeirah Shava? The Masara of Gzeirah Shava was given over in the following way. There is a Gzeirah Shava about this topic. In other words, let's for argument's sake say there are 800 Gzeirah Shavas in Shas. Okay, I don't know if that number is accurate, but let's say it for argument's sake. The topic is that there's a Gzeirah Shava was given over as a Kabbalah. There is a Gzeirah Shava about A. Is a Gzeirah Shava about B. About all these dinim. That is what was Nimsar Moshe Mi-Sinai. Well, the Ramban actually has a twist on this. But they says that is Elam Kim Kibbol Me'rabe. Everyone agrees where there's a Gzeirah Shava. That we don't argue about. We argue about application of Gzeirah Shava. What is the Gzeirah Shava? How to apply the Gzeirah Shava? Because the details, the general idea is given over. Yes, there's a Gzeirah Shava about whatever it is. I don't have the Ramban here. He gives like three examples. But again, as the Ramban says, there's so many machlokas about Gzeirah Shava, he says, I'm not going to bother sourcing this one. I mean, other places he'll source. It's like, as one of the Gedolei Achronim says on the Ramban, his work in the second Sherish, in the Sasagra on the Rambam's second Sherish, is an unbelievable display of unbelievable expertise in Shas from one, like just from one end to the other. Unbelievable. Anyway, so over there he gives like three quick examples, which I didn't bother writing down. And whatever, I'm sure we're sort of familiar with this. And the Ramban's understanding is the idea was given that there's a Gzeirah Shava about X without details. Therefore, are the details I can have machlokas. That's what the Ramban says. It's in the second Sharish in the Frankel edition on page Samach Dalet. On page Samach Dalet. Now the Ramban says, this is typical Ramban now, the Ramban says, like a brilliancy to tack off the whole piece, he says there's a well-known chazal that says when Moshe Rabbeinu died, 3,000 halachas were forgotten. V'hichzirem Asmiel ben Knaz b'pilpula. So the Ramban wants to suggest that originally the details were given. And the details were lost, and the klalim and the rule was remembered. And what Asniel ben Knaz did was he restored the details, or he clarified details. Okay, that's a Ramban. I couldn't resist telling you that because it's such a fascinating idea, and I couldn't resist passing it on. Okay, now we're going to go to the next step of this issue, and that is understanding hara. There's a concept of hara. Mishnah is sof hara. It's a concept, it's a Shas concept. What does that mean? And I'm basing this on a comment of the Ramban earlier in the first Hasaga on the first Sharish. This is what this one's based on. What's Hara? There are many dinim, there are many laws in the Torah which are vague. We understand that? I mean, they're just all over the place, vague. And how do we know them? So, again, Tefillin, the basic tzura, the basic, you know, what tefillin look like, is clearly halach mashmas ki'ilu, clearly a pure masara halach mashmas Sinai. That the ritzuas have to be black, then I know 100% is halach mashmas Sinai. That's halach mashmas Sinai. But in many cases, and the Ramban says this explicitly, in terms of defining the details of Hilchos Shabbos, all the details weren't given down. And that's an issue of Hara. That's an issue of Hara. We know the Lama. I'm pretty sure I didn't have time to like double check this one either. Lama Tasmalafis is definitely Daraisa. Is that a Lachman from Sinai or not? I'm not sure. I don't think it is. I'm pretty sure it's a Daraisa. Lama Tasmalafis Daraisa is definitely Daraisa. I don't think it's a Lachman from Sinai. Rabbi Lama Tasmalafis is definitely Daraisa. But the details of how I define each Malacha, the size of this Daraisa, it's Daraisa. It's 100% Daraisa. But that is an issue of the competency level of Hara'ah. The Balei Mishnah, the Tanoim, were Balei Hara'ah, and therefore they had the ability to clearly define how, where I say it's Bishul Daraisa, where I say no, it's only Bishul Darabanan. Where do I say it's Hotzah Daraisa? Where do I say it's Hotzah Darabanan? Where do I say this? Every malacha, if you look in the Rambam in Hilchos Shabbos, Zayin Ches Tes, approximately, Hilchos Shabbos, Perek Zayin Ches Tes, Daraisas, Yud Yud Aleph Yud Beis Darabanans. That's how the Rambam does it. He does the Daraisas, then the Darabanans. That chiluk, that differentiation between where I'm Daraisa and where I'm Darabanan, that differentiation was established by the Chachmei Mishnah. Doesn't mean it's not the Raisa. It's 100% the Raisa. But that, in order to do that, we have to be Balei Hara. We're no longer Balei Hara. We can't do that. Okay. Okay, now, let's move into Agadata. Agadata is, you know, you're about to ask something? No. Agadata is a little different. Because, first of all, it's obvious that there's no Hara'ah in Agadata. It's obvious that we're not dealing with an issue of Hara'ah, of Psak. And that's why, if a Tana says something, an American can say something else. And a Rishon can say a third thing. Because there's no Hara'ah. So, he has one shot, you have another shot. Now, of course, you have to be know your place, as we say. And some people are worth arguing with, and other people are not worth arguing with. And okay, you are arguing, not really arguing, whatever. But you have to, as we say, know your place. But there's, because Agadata is not Hara, then by definition, it's a person has the ability to open their mouth, even though. You know, there's like a rule. We know a rule, one of the most cardinal rules in Shas is Amoraim don't argue on the Mishnah. Rishonim don't argue on the Shas. Now, I would say Achronim don't argue with Rishonim, but that's not really true. Achronim will argue with Rishonim. Just usually won't. I mean, it depends which Achronim, it depends which Rishonim, it depends whatever. Let's not worry about all those details. That is not an ironclad rule. You can't argue on Shas, that's an ironclad rule. We don't argue with Shas. Shas doesn't argue with the Mishnah. So, it's actually interesting. Even though Shas is not Ke'ilu, it's not Dine Hara Mamish the same way Mishnah is. But nonetheless, Shas does have a level of, you know, of Limud and Hara that Rishonim definitely don't have. Okay. Now, it's sort of like this, though. Someone actually came over to me and asked me to say Pshat. He couldn't figure out Pshat in a certain Gemara and Ksuvos. Gemara and Ksuvos says, whoever lives in the land of Israel, doesn't have sin. That's what it says. The Gemara and Ksuvos. And the Gemara and Ksuvos, to prove it, brings a pasuk in Yeshaya. So let me read you the pasuk in Yeshaya. It brings the following pasuk. Bal yomer shachin chalisi. Ha'am ha'yoshev ba nesu avon. And the one who dwells shouldn't say, I'm sick. Because the nation that lives there is Nasu, is lifted up from sin. So the question is, what's the Gemara learning out of that pasuk? And it's sort of like this. If I look at that pasuk, you know, the Rambam says a rule that if a missionary asks you a question, you know how you answer him?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
No. The Rambam says, put the pasuk in context, and then you'll be able to answer. That's the general rule. The general rule of almost every proof missionaries bring from Tanakh to both Islam and Christianity is they take the psukim out of context or completely out of context. Okay. So, a guy asked me a question. I told him, go read Yeshaya. We have to put the pasuk in context. After we put the pasuk in context, then we'll be able to understand what Shas wants. So, I went through the psukim over there, and it's actually a slight machlokas Rashi in the Radak. The machlokas is not as substantial as you think. It's how do we learn those psukim? How do we learn that parsha? The way I learn that parsha is speaking about Chizkiah and Sancheirev. Or we learn that parsha is Asida, is speaking about Melech Mashiach. Those are the two ways to learn the pasuk. Rashi and the Radak, approximately, each one does one. And each one does one. And do you learn Bal Yomar Shachein, Chalisi? Do you learn who's the Shachein? And the Shachein and the dweller should not say, I'm sick. Who's the dweller? Is it the people living in Eretz Yisrael, or it's the neighbors, or like Shechenim? Like neighbors. Is it the dweller or it's the neighbors? The Gemara is clearly learning that it means the dweller, not the neighbors. Rashi and Yeshaya learns it means the neighbors. And that, I don't want to get into why Rashi does it that way, but whatever. Rashi is learning it asida. He's not learning it going on Chizkiah and Sancheirev, and that's how he learns it. But if you learn going on Chizkiah and Sancheirev, then you learn it going on Al Yom HaShachin, that the people who dwell, who are living in Yerushalayim, should not say Chalisi, should not say I'm sick. Ha'am HaYosheba Nesu Avon, because the people living there were Nesu Avon. The people living there had their sins removed. And to make a long story short, there was a massive confrontation between Chizkiah and Sancheirev, and Sancheirev wiped out most of Malchus Yehuda. Whoever survived living and come by fleeing to Yerushalayim. And they survived a partially difficult siege and a lot of threats and a lot of this and a lot of that and a lot of the next. And the pasuk is saying, Val Yomar Shachein, those who dwelt should not say Chalisa, should not complain, should not say I'm sick, it's difficult, because they're Nesu Avon. So my friend asked me, this is very nice, that's a very nice pasuk, but what's the Gemara getting that from? Where's the Gemara getting it from? The Gemara says, if I live in Eretz Yisrael, I'm Nesu Avon. It's as if I don't have sin. So where do you see that from the Gemara? Where do you see that from the Pasuk? The Pasuk is either Asida, is either speaking of Asur Lavo, or it's speaking about Sancheirev and Chizkiah. It's very specific circumstances. Where in the world is the Gemara got out? But it means whoever lives in Eretz Yisrael at any time, and that's definitely the implication. Ask Rabbi Meir, he'll tell you that. You live in Eretz Yisrael, Nesu Avon. It takes away your sin. Right. Okay. Yeah. Well. Okay. Whatever. Let's not get into Rabbi Meir right now. We're very friendly, as you see. Okay. It's like this. So here's how I understand. Here's how I understand the Gemara. The way the Gemara is learning at the pasuk. What do I see from the pasuk? I see from the pasuk what I would call school of Eretz Yisrael. I see from the pasuk that it's implicit in the power of Eretz Yisrael to be Nesu Avon. Okay. Anachinami. The full power of that. The full power of that is not now. It's other times. But because that is implicit in the power in the Sgulas Haaretz, therefore, even when we don't have the situations which are directly coming out, directly parallel to what's going on in the Parsha there, nonetheless, there's still a connection. The connection to Eretz Yisrael still gives a certain Nesias of it. And this is a classic drush. It's called I call this a parallelism. That the Gemara is, I wouldn't say taking a pasuk out of context, but rather learning there's something implicit behind the pasuk. If it would be in a halachic Gemara, the Gemara says, if I live in Eretz Yisrael, I don't have sin. And it brings our pasuk. If it would be a halachic Gemara, the Gemara would say, what are you talking about? That's by Chizkiah. And then the Gemara would bother answering me back, okay, Anachinami, by Chizkiah it was a lot, and by us it's a little. But because it's not a halachic gemara, rather it's an agada to the gemara doesn't bother saying it out, even though ki'ilu, the gemara expects you to pick that up. The gemara certainly does not think, you know, a gemara when it quotes a pasuk, it certainly assumes that you either know the pasuk or bother looking it up. It doesn't think that you daven the pasuk as part of the gemara. Yeah, okay. Here we're over here. Okay. Cha-cha-cha-cha-cha. Now, there's another issue also. Now, I might have covered that. Just wait a second. That issue I covered. Now, we do have a parallel concept to the halachic issues. And that is, when Agarata says something consistently in many places, and there's no hechreya, there's no way to prove it from the Pesukim. For example, the Ramban comments that Nimrod, we know who Nimrod was?
Yeah.
Nimrod being in Russia. You cannot prove that from the Pesukim. And as a matter of fact, Ibn Ezra wants to say he wasn't.
No?
You could argue that, and Hachinami. And see, the Ramban...
It's not very strong,
you could, the Ibn Ezra learns it that way. The Ibn Ezra learns Gibur Tzadik Lefnei Hashem means he was Makriv Karbanos.
Right.
That's how the Ibn Ezra learns it. The Ramban, see, it's like this. The Ramban, in his maybe not famous but should be famous opening poem to Torah, he says Va'asimu Mor Panai, and I'll put in front of my face Shnei Neris Menorah HaTahara, the two candles of the holy candle of Abra. And who is that? That's Ibn Ezra and Rashi. So first he starts out with Rashi. He says, "Ah, Rashi, Mukhtar bin Musa, the Mikra, the Mishnah, the Gemara. Rashi is crowned by his achievement in the entirety of Torah. Unbelievable. And he's going to work on it. V'im Rabbi Avram Ibn Ezra, and with the Ibn Ezra, Yiyavana Tachacha Magula Va'ava Musutara. With the Ibn Ezra, I'm going to give him open rebuke and hidden love." That's what the Ramban says. So there are places where the Ramban literally ki'ilu opens the window up and chucks the Ibn Ezra out. Literally. This is not one of them. This one, the Ramban is sharp, but he doesn't quite chuck the Ibn Ezra out the window, as it could be said. And the lashon of the Ramban is, you're right, technically there's no way to prove it one way or the other. But why should we be chalak? There's no way to prove what the Ibn Ezra is saying. And why should we be chalak on what is clearly Masar's Chazal? Because again, there's no way to know that Nimrod was really a Russian. There's no way to prove that. And if Chazal say he was, without proof, it's made, in other words, this is like the conceptual equivalent of ayin ba'ayin. I have ayin ba'ayin. It should say mean one thing, but Chazal say means something else. Where did Chazal get that from? So it's obviously a pure Masorah, says the Rambam. The Ramban over here is doing something conceptually similar. He's saying, Nimrod, you could argue one way or the other. There's no machlokas about it. I could have went to Pesukim like the Chazal could have certainly went to Pesukim like the Ibn Ezra, and why didn't they? So the Ramban concludes from the fact that there's no Shita and Chazal learning differently when the Pesukim have no Hechra, have no way, there's no reason to learn them like Chazal learned them. That it must be by force that there is an absolute Masorah about Nimrod that he was a Russian. Okay, now we're going to do what I call Emunas Chachamim 3. There's no question that in Agarata there's no Hara. And there's no question that, as we say, you know, You could certainly, you know, it's actually interesting. I told this over to Jason for some reason, Jason Wiener. So I'll tell it to you also. Someone told it to me last week. It's a very cute piece of Chassidus Shadrush. And I'm first going to tell it to you, and then I'm going to ask questions on it, and then I'm going to do as much as I can with it. Pasuk says in the end of Eicha, Shavas Mesos Libeinu, Nepach le'evu mecholenu. Shavas Mesos Libeinu means it was finished off, the joy of our heart. Nepach le'evu, it was turned into mourning, mecholenu, our song, or our dance. Right, we got to pasuk. Shavas Moses Libeda, Nebuchadnezzar Elam Lachoinu. Rabbi Baruch Hu of Mezhibuz, who's the Basham's grandson. I hold he's like a quasi-tragic figure in Hasidus. Maybe we'll get there in the history class. He thought everyone should listen to him like they listened to his grandfather. And it just wasn't happening. And he attempted to impose his authority over the other, you know, Rebbes, the other Hasidic Rebbes at the time, and it like went nowhere. And I consider him like a quasi-tragic figure. Anyway, so here's a vertel from Rabbulichel of Mezhibuz. Rabbulichel of Mezhibuz says, Shabbos was supposed to be Beinu. Shabbos is supposed to be the joy of our heart. If we prepare for Shabbos properly all week, it'll be the joy of our heart. A lot of people don't. And a lot of people don't enjoy Shabbos. So you want to know why? Because it's Nepach Le'evil Mecholeinu. Because our chol, our weekday, is Nepach Le'evil. It's like mourning. We're not doing the right things in the week. And so if you want to know why, it should be Shabbos Mesos Libeinu. But when it's not, the reason is Nepach Le'evil Mecholeinu. Now, that's an interesting piece of Chassidus Drush, and I don't really know what to make out of it personally. In other words, I don't see any real connection between Rabburuchel's Vertel and the Pasuk. Rabburuchel, yeah, that's what they call him. Rabburuchel. Burich. That's a Ukrainian pronunciation. He's from the Ukraine, so we should certainly use Ukrainian pronunciation. So, Rabburuchel, that's his Vart. Okay, I don't know exactly what to ask me what I should really make out of it. I'm not 100% sure. But he's a pretty early Rebbe, so I will not completely, you know, someone later, more contemporary, saying something like that, I would literally toss it straight out the window. But someone that early, this is 200 years ago, they weren't such small, they were big people, and apparently he saw some connection between the Pasuk and his idea.
Yeah, anyway,
so but the point for us, though, is that when we get to the Rishonim, like Rashi, the Ramban, the Rambam, etc., Gedal Yachron, the Maral, etc., the Gaon, it's 100% true. You know, we're entitled to say what we want, to a certain extent. But we also have to remember and appreciate the depth of these, you know, of the Rishonim's penetration of Shas, Torah thought, etc. And it behooves us to have Derech Eretz and try to figure out what they want, because as I say, it will pay, it will give us good fruits. It really will. And when I said on Tehillim 9 and 10 years ago, I coined the following phrase: if we're faithful to Rashi, Rashi will be faithful to us. Okay, and for the grand finale of all this, I don't know if one of you guys, one who had this discussion with Rabbi Zinkin, but if you are, then you're going to get to hear my opinion now. Okay, in last week's parsha, the pasuk says, "Vayishkav after Rachel died, Yeach Reuven Vayishkav as Bilha." Reuven went, and the pasuk literally means, "And he slept with Bilha." Now, the Gemara says, "You know the Gemara? Yeah. Shabbos Nuvav? No." It's in a sugya of Kol Ha'omer So and Salchata Einu Al Torah. You remember that? Okay, come on, Josh. How can you forget that one? Yeah, sorry. There's a whole slew of sugyas in Shabbos Nun Hei Nun Vav. Kol Ha'omer David Chata Einu Al Torah. Kol Ha'omer Shlomo Chata. Whoever says David. Whoever says Shlomo said. Whoever says this one said. B'nei Eli, B'nei Shmuel, etc., etc., etc. Yeah. I don't want to get into all the details. No. The sugya has its nuances, and I don't want to get into every single case, because every single case means it says one thing, it doesn't mean exactly what it says. That's the yesod of every single case over there. Koha Omer Ruven Chata Eino Elatoa. Koha Omer Ruven Chata Eino Elatoa. Now, I'm relatively sure that there's no shita in Chazal that learn Vayeach Reuven Yishkav Esbila, it should be learned literally. As far as I know, there's no shita that says that. Now, using the Rambam's mechanics and system and structure, that's going to lead me to conclude that when that Chazal says Kol Ha'omer Reuven Chata Eino Elatoa, it's pure Masara. That's what's going to lead me to conclude. Because again, the Pasuk says one thing, and Chazal says something else. And the Rambam says, the Rambam says, why is that true? There's machlokas about everything practically. Over here, there's no machlokas. So the Rambam concludes from that that when you have such a structural phenomenon, the answer must be pure Masara. The answer must be pure Masara. Now, as the Rambam says in the first Sharish in Sefer HaMitzvos, Mechach Masachasuv, the Sugya tries to learn it out though. The sugya and Shabbos will try to prove each one of these. And the point is it's ma'ain what I told you from the altar from Kelb, El Kenav El Kelb Center. Anachinami, it's true that it was a pure Masara, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't try to find proof to it from the Psukim. Now I also say for the records that even if you're going to say that Gemara of Ka'om Ruben Chata Enu El Toa, Ka'om Ruben Chata Enu El Toa is not pure Masara, I would be, to accuse Ruvain of doing something like that against Chazal, even though it's not Hara. This is not Hara. That's not Chachmei Mishnah being Mara. And if you're going against it, you're not being Kofer. You're not denying. You're not going against Hara's Chazal. Mitzad the other side of the coin is as we saw from the Rambam in the Hakdama Techelek, that if you mevazel Tamidei Chacham, Ein Melchei Kolam Haba, and I'd be very hesitant to level an accusation like that against Ruvain, going against what Chazal say, because it's not an issue of Chazal's kavod, rather it's an embarrassing Chazal, rather it's an issue of Ruvain's kavod, Ruvain's honor. Now, it's sort of like this. You can't ask a question. You with me, Josh? This is a legitimate question. So pray tell, as we can say in Victorian English, pray tell, if in fact Ruvain did not have relations with Bilha, why in the world does the pasuk make it sound that he did? That's a legitimate question. And if you think that question is not, if you know, some people would say, people from a more yeshivish background than you would say, we're not supposed to ask questions on Chazal. So to that I say, Rashi was bothered by the question. But as I said, I think it was last night, Rashi, of course, doesn't answer it in last week's parsha. He rather answers it somewhere else. And that's another classic example of Rashi's intellectual elitism, which is, if you're not smart enough to figure out what I wrote, it's not my fault that you didn't figure it out. I told you guys the story of the Vilna Gaon last night. The Vilna Gaon in his first year in Vilna. We did that once this year. Okay, so first let me just show you this Rashi. And that I hold is like, maybe if we're going over time, we won't do that story. In Parshas Vayechi, Pasuk says, Ruvin Bukhari Ata, Kochi Vereshus Oni, Yetzos Eis Vezer Oz, Pachas Kamai Maltosa, Ki Elisa Mishkeve Avicha, Az Chivalta Yitzui Ava. You're too quick like water. You did not wait. You went up to your father's bed. Then you were mechalel. You profaned Yitzui Ava. Rashi says, you profaned Yitzui Ava. Says Rashi, fascinating Rashi. Az chivalta, osa shem sha'ol Yitzui, viha shechina she'adak lios olal Yitzui. Where Yaakov was kaveh, where Yaakov established to sleep with his wife, there was Shechina there. There was a Shechina there. And when Reuven came in and moved Yaakov's bed, he interfered with that Shechina being on his father's bed. And because that Shechina was a product of Yaakov's relationship with his wives, and Reuven came in and interfered with it, that's why the pasuk says, "V'yelch Reuven v'yishkav es bila aviv, bila pilegesh aviv." Not that he actually slept with her, but he did interfere and touch ki'ilu and make a pagam in that shechina that existed on Yaakov's bed, and therefore the pasuk makes it sound like he actually slept with her. Okay, guys, I should tell you the story with the gun or not? You want to hear the story with the gun? Yeah? Okay. Story with the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon was a well-known genius. Everyone knew for a long time that he was something special. And At, I don't know what the age was, let's say he was 25 or so, he's going to say his first public shir. So all the major Talmidei Chachamim in Vilna and the Vilna area got together, came to a Beis Midrash to hear the guy's first shir. He says the shir. They come over to him after the shir and they ask him 20 questions. And he says, okay, let me hear all, here's all the questions. He says, okay. So wait a second, sit back down. Everyone sits down, he says the shir another time. And they saw that of the 20 questions, he'd really answered 12 of them. They said, okay, they come over to him after the shir. Very good, very good. These questions you answered already in your shir, but what about these questions? He said, okay, sit back down. He said the shir, repeated word for word a second time, and they saw that he had answered not 12 of the questions, 17 of the questions. So, but what about these questions? He said, okay, Chabra, sit back down. He said the shir a third time, and they saw he'd actually answered all the questions before they started. And that, I'm not sure where this story appears, but that absolutely, I have no question that that's the Rashi and B'chol Tar Kula. He's answered our questions. We just have to find out where it is. Fine. I'd come, guys.